Now broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, Czech Books with David Vaughan, featuring the final part of Jaroslava Skleničková's moving memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot. That will be followed by a fresh edition of Mailbox with Pavla Horáková, and we'll wind up the show with another part of From the Archives, a mini-history series which Radio Prague is currently rebroadcasting. So please stay with us as we now turn to literature. We have reached the ninth and final part of our serialized reading of If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot by Jaroslava Skleničková. The war is over and Jaroslava's account takes us from the traumas of her return to the present day and her life with her husband Mirek in the new Lidice. But first, David Vaughan sums up the story so far.
The book began with Jaroslava recalling a contented and very ordinary childhood. Her world is turned upside down when the Nazis destroy her home village of Lidice in June 1942. She describes the shock of arriving in Germany at the Ravensbrück concentration camp, the difficulties of adapting, and the friendships that she makes. Then comes the drama and fear of the death march as the Nazis evacuate the camp. And finally, the surviving women of Lidice managed to escape into territory liberated by the Red Army. A few days later, the war is over. Now the time has come to return home and to face the reality of what has happened in Lidice. Veronica Hicks reads.
The Bitter Smiles of Liberty. Our Return. At last, after a long 3 years, I'm returning home. Home? Where is home? What is awaiting us there? Meanwhile, I'm not thinking much about it. I'm no longer shut away. I'm a free person. And I'm returning to my homeland. The bus is taking us from Neubrandenburg towards our border. We had to go around Dresden. After the bombardment, the streets were full of rubble, and only chimneys rose to the sky. After a long time, we cross the border. At last, our long yearned-for homeland. We climb down from the buses. A military company, by chance from Kladno, greets us, and we hear the national anthem. Where is my home? Tears stream from my eyes. Some of the soldiers facing us turn their heads aside. They're also weeping. Mama, who's standing beside me, says, when the anthem ends, it must be even worse than we think. I don't understand her words. What could be worse than what we've lived through? Now we're free. We know that Lidice has been demolished, but somehow it will turn out all right when Papa is back home. And little Doník, my cousin, whose mother perished in the gas chamber, will now be ours. On June the 10th, a commemoration for what had happened at Lidice was held. We went on foot from Bushtjehrad, and for the first time we saw an empty plain instead of the village of Lidice. A huge crowd of people had gathered for this anniversary. Never again did so many people meet together in Lidice. Among other guests, President Beneš spoke from the tribune. We were sitting below it, all the women together, and in front of us were the graves of our fathers, husbands, and sons. I felt terrible. If only I could weep. I had a lump in my throat, and I still could not believe that my much-loved father was no longer alive. While I was still in the concentration camp, I would reproach Mama that I was not a boy. I could have been with him, and he wouldn't have been so sad. For a very long time, even though we were then living in Prague, I imagined that we would meet somewhere, that it was impossible that he should not exist any more. I started work in the pensions office on August the 16th, 1945. I worked on the fourth floor in a large hall where there were tables in two rows. I used to sit next to Maria Batikova, who later became my friend for the rest of my life. She was 9 years older than I, and that was no doubt the reason why we understood each other so well. I was only 19, but I didn't view the world as my contemporaries, whose heads were full only of dances and how to turn a boy's head. When I was with them, I felt myself to be an old, experienced woman, who already had a piece of hard life behind her. On the other hand, though, in a certain sense, I had also remained a child, who, under incomprehensible conditions, had missed out on her carefree youth. It was only with difficulty that I rid myself of habits from the concentration camp. I already had them coded in my brain. I kept bread in a drawer in the table, and I would break off pieces and put them into my mouth, only when no one was looking. Whenever the boss, who sat facing us, would lift his head, I immediately stopped chewing. Going around Prague, I would involuntarily walk on the road alongside the pavement. It was because when I worked outside the camp, I wasn't permitted to even step on the pavement. At once the guard would shout at us that the pavement was for people and not for us. Fortunately, in 1945, there was not as much traffic on the roads as there is today. In the theatre one day, a young man sat down next to me and introduced himself as Mirek. We didn't talk much in the auditorium. He just asked me what I did in my free time. I told him that I'd just got my driver's license, but had no car as yet. Otherwise, I go to the language school to learn English. When the performance was over, Mirek announced that he would accompany me home, as he was going in the same direction. On the way, he started to tell me that, during the war, he was sent to Germany on forced labour, and how often Berlin was bombarded. I let slip, "I know. The bombers flew to Berlin directly over our concentration camp." Mirek asked me if I'd also been sent to forced labour. I answered that I had not, but that I heard about the bombardment. I was very careful not to let him know straight away that I came from Lidice. I gave him my telephone number to work, and we parted at my house after he'd invited me to the cinema. In time, we began to go together to the theatre, exhibitions, for walks and the like. Then Mirek learned from Yarka that I was one of the Lidice women. And so there was a topic for conversation, though I was not very willing to talk about it. For a long time, we were just friends. I wouldn't say that young men showed no interest in me, but I wasn't interested. I never counted with the relationship with Mirek developing into something more serious. My idea of an ideal man was someone tall with black hair and dark eyes, like my papa used to be, and also at least 15 years older than me. Mirek was fair, blue-eyed, and only 1 year older than I was. Soon after our wedding, I discovered that I was pregnant. At first, Mama was not very pleased, She told us we did not need to be in such a hurry. Later, she stopped grumbling, and it could be seen that she was looking forward to her grandchild. It was on December the 9th when I realized that the birth was imminent. Mirek was just getting ready to go to Ostrava on business, so he took me to the maternity hospital in Londinska Street, and from there he went straight to the railway station. Jitka was born at 12:30 on the night of Monday, December the 10th, 1951. I was happy. At last, I had my own child. When I'd seen in the camp how they were sterilizing young gypsy girls, I would say to myself, if that happened to me, I'd throw myself on the electrified barbed wire. Now, my life's dream was fulfilled. When I retired in the autumn of 1979, we moved to Lidice for good. At that time I was often troubled by vivid memories of all I'd lived through. I was always rather shy of speaking about myself, especially if people I did not know were present. But my husband Mirek and the children, when they grew up, also came to hear only gradually some of the details, and not all of them. And it was in Lidice that I became once again aware of how much I was missing my friends from childhood, who had perished in Poland. The one I missed most was Mania Mulakova. I would certainly have got on well with her. Once, during the summer holidays, when my children were still small, I met her mother. She looked at us sadly and remarked, "See what grandchildren I could have now had." I felt terribly sorry for her, and I didn't know what to say to cheer her up. From then on, I was careful not to meet her again, so as not to reopen her wounds. Perhaps it was all the more difficult for me, because I had fulfilled a great wish from that point of view. Even when I was very small, and someone asked what I wanted to be, I replied, a mother. Now I derive great pleasure from my children and grandchildren, and I thank fate that I met Mirek, with whom I'm living happily in our old age. Several years ago we celebrated our golden anniversary, and at the local town hall we renewed our marriage vows in front of the mayor, Mr. Václav Zelenka, who was one of the few Lidice children who survived because he was selected for so-called re-education. And what else do I wish? That we should live in good health, together with our children and their families, to see not only our diamond wedding, but also our great-grandchildren.
That was British actress Veronica Hicks reading from Yaroslava Skleničková's moving memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot. You will find the entire series on Radio Prague's webpage. That's at www.radio.cz. And, of course, David Vaughan will be back with a fresh edition of Checkbooks in just a fortnight's time. Now we turn to your letters in Pavla Horáková's Mailbox Show. Hello and welcome to Mailbox. First of all, I would like to thank all of our listeners who tune in to Radio Prague's special August the 31st program and sent us their reception reports. The QSL cards are on their way. And for all the wonderful birthday greetings you've sent us over the past weeks. Let's hear at least a few of them. Tracy Andreotti, the winner of last year's annual contest, describes herself as Radio Prague's number one fan in the Midwest.
I want to wish everyone at Radio Prague a very happy 75th birthday. It's almost a year since Henry and I were your guests in Prague and at the station, and we are forever filled with wonderful thoughts and memories. You must all be applauded for the exemplary work that you do, especially given the severe budget cuts that you have been forced to deal with. On a side note, please do not start having a comment section. Please. Facebook exists for that, and so many people blog, and there are still many of us who are looking for actual journalism, educated, thought-out pieces by professionals. Here in the US, in the land of look at me, it seems that all we have sometimes are comments. And besides, isn't that what Mailbox is for?
Harold Yeglin writes from Virginia.
Congratulations on Radio Prague's 75th anniversary. A milestone indeed, through thick and thin in Czech history. Regarding the demise of Radio Prague's shortwave broadcasts, I do not miss them. For me, the advent of internet technology has replaced oft weak or scratchy shortwave signals heard at this location in the southeast United States. I am not bound by a shortwave schedule. Radio Prague is available on my computer at all hours.
Also from the United States, Stan Schmidt writes,
I am very glad to be able to wish the staff of Radio Prague a happy 75th birthday and hope that the powers that be allow you to reach 100. Back in 1968, I was spending part of the summer at my grandparents' farm. In the summer kitchen, there was an old tube radio in a wooden cabinet that my grandfather still used to listen to the farm reports during lunch and baseball games at night. That 1930s vintage radio was my introduction to both shortwave radio and Radio Prague. As a grade school kid, I was interested in geography and history. I spent the rest of my summer listening to the marvel of radio coming from all over the world. Over the years, the staff and programming has changed and evolved, but you have continued to present both quality and informative programs. I found changes at Radio Prague during the transition to a democratic Czech state to be of special interest. It was with some sadness to see Radio Prague joining the list of stations eliminating shortwave service this year, but it is understandable. My reception for that last broadcast was not good. Even without shortwave, you still provide a viable service for people seeking news and information on the Czech Republic. I'm looking forward to your internet program on the 31st. Thank you all for the news and entertainment over the years, and best birthday wishes for the future of Radio Prague.
Much as I'd like to devote more time to your birthday wishes, we need to give some space to our monthly competition and your thoroughly researched answers. Colin Law writes from New Zealand.
Miroslava Šternová Beka was born on the 26th of February 1926 in Prague, Czechoslovakia. She was adopted by Dr. Oskar Stern and his wife Miroslava, née Beka. The family had to leave Czechoslovakia in 1939 because of the Nazi persecution of Jewish people. They were held in a concentration camp for a period, but then reached Scandinavia and moved on to Mexico in 1940. In 1946, she starred in the movie Tragic Wedding and went on to star in some 27 movies, which resulted in her gaining a reputation as the Mexican Marilyn Monroe. Miroslava became friendly with a Spanish bullfighter named Luis Miguel Dominguín, and while she was visiting Spain, they made plans to marry. However, in 1954, she returned to Mexico to continue her acting career. Shortly afterwards, on the 1st of March 1955, she learned that Dominguín had married Italian actress Lucia Bose in Nevada. From that time, Miroslava became very depressed, and on the 10th of March, her housekeeper was concerned that she was unable to get any response despite repeated calls to Miroslava's room. When the housekeeper and actress friend went into the room, they found Miroslava dead, with a photograph of Dominguín in her hand.
Mary Lou Krennick writes from Texas.
Her life is the subject of a short story by Guadalupe Loesa, which was adapted by Alejandro Pelayo for his 1992 Mexican film called Miroslava. The date of her death was March 9, 1955, in Mexico City, Mexico. She is remembered as an underestimated actress whose chameleonic film persona left a collection of remarkable performances. In quite a coincidence, she resembled the American film star Marilyn Monroe, who suffered a much familiar fate.
Charles Konesny is our regular listener in Ohio.
Miroslava was a Czech girl with charm and beauty that showed through in beauty contests and then spread by her talent on the big screen, where her films were made mostly in Mexico. It is too bad that she did not make a film in her home country after the war, but maybe the political situation was a problem. However, she was an actress who could play many types of roles from comedy to love and romance. But the last romantic role was in her real life with The Matador, where she played the game of love and lost, and then reached for the sleeping pills.
Henrik Klemets writes from Sweden.
Historically, there was the Greek drama. In our time, the cinema, the Argentine tango, or the Mexican corrido. Any of these frameworks would be able to handle the tragic ups and downs in the life of the Mexican Marilyn Monroe, Miroslava Stern.
Jayanta Chakrabarti follows our programs in India.
Born in pre-war Prague, Miroslava Stern became a cult figure during Mexican cinema's golden age, contributing significantly to the cultural arena of her adopted country's film industry. Often referred to as Mexico's Marilyn Monroe, her gifted talent and beauty remain underutilized. I had the privilege to see the screening of her last film, which will remain in my memory for a long time to come.
Harold Yeglin writes from Virginia.
I believe the answer to the August quiz question is actress Miroslava, Czech-born and Mexico-reared Miroslava Sternova. She became, quoting an internet source, one of Mexico's most popular leading ladies in the late 1940s. She went to Hollywood in 1951 and appeared opposite Anthony Quinn in the movie The Brave Bulls. She would return to American films only once, opposite Joel McCrea in Stranger on Horseback in 1955, which, like her most famous film, The Criminal Life of Archibaldo de la Cruz in 1956, was released posthumously.
And from England, David Eldridge writes...
Miroslava's stepfather, Oscar Leo Stern, was from 1931 to 1939 the head doctor in the Spa Teplice nad Bečvou in Moravia. When the Germans occupied the Czech lands, Oscar Stern managed to emigrate to Mexico. That was fortunate for him and his family, as few of the numerous Jews inhabiting the region survived the war. Miroslava suffered from severe depression over several events in her personal life, and it was when she read in a newspaper that a close friend had married another person, she took an overdose of barbiturates and was found dead with a suicide note on March 10, 1955. That wasn't her first suicide attempt.
Thank you so much for taking part in our monthly quiz. Unfortunately, there can only be one winner, and this time he is Ganesh Chandra Kundu from India. Congratulations, your Radio Prague parcel is in the post, and I will be looking forward to receiving even more answers to this question. Our September Mystery Man is an award-winning Czech photographer. Born in 1938, he left Czechoslovakia in the aftermath of the Soviet occupation, and in 1971 joined the Magnum Photos Cooperative of Photographers and Photojournalists. Please send us his name to english@radio.cz by the end of September. Mailbox will be back again on September the 17th. Please keep your letters and reception reports coming, and until then, goodbye.
My thanks to Pavla and, of course, to all of you for your letters and well wishes on Radio Prague's 75th birthday this week. Now, in the last part of our show today, another part of David Vaughan's history series from the archives.
For this week's programme, we interrupt our chronological journey through the Czech radio archives and go back as far as 1912. Throughout this summer in Prague, it has been hard not to notice posters depicting the Titanic as the great liner sank on the night from April the 14th to the 15th, 1912. They're advertising an exhibition of artefacts from the ship currently on show in the Czech capital. One member of the crew who survived was a young Czech waiter, Rudolf Linhart. He had been working in a London hotel in the years before the First World War, and at the beginning of 1912 his dream came true when he was taken on by the White Star Line to work as a waiter for the maiden voyage of the greatest ship on earth. In an interview for Czechoslovak radio 50 years later, he remembered the traumatic experience of that fateful night in April.
Ja už jsem byl po práci, byli jsme
I'd finished work and was in our cabin up in my hammock, watching the other lads playing cards. Suddenly we felt an impact. We all jumped and wondered what it was. But then we went back to what we were doing. After 5 or 10 minutes, someone came up to the cabin and cried, "We're going down!" I went to wake up the people in their cabins. It was just after midnight. We told them to come up on deck. Some agreed, some resisted, but it was captain's orders, so they had to obey. We went to the rail. We told the women and children to get into the boats. At first, many of the women didn't want to go, not without their husbands. We had to use force to pull them away. I was in the 8th lifeboat. I didn't know how to row, but I was given an oar. There were 40 to 45 of us, including 6 or 8 crew members, and it was packed. The rest were women and children. We rowed away from the ship so it wouldn't pull us down with it. We looked back and saw the lights of the ship. Around 2 in the morning, they went out. After that, people started jumping into the water, especially towards the end. We could just see them from the distance. People with life jackets grabbed hold of the lifeboat. We had to push them away because the boat was full. They would have pulled us under. It wasn't a nice sight to see someone looking at you with relief in his eyes, thinking that he'd reached safety. The officer had to shoot some of them. There was no choice.
That was From the Archives with David Vaughan, and I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for listening, and do join us again sometime soon.
vous écoutez Radio